We'll call the meeting to order, and we have a full committee, youth and governance is all in attendance, that's a roll call. Approval of the minutes of the previous meeting. Has everyone read the minutes, anyone like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve.
Second by Supervisor Spolinski, second by Supervisor Noble, to approve the minutes of December 2nd. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed, youth and governance?
Aye.
Chairman, committee members, supervisor. I have a couple of things, this weekend, John's staff and the Parks Department, the scouts held our second youth fishing derby at the Katy Park. And I'm not sure if anybody stopped out there. I was out, and even after we had all that rain before, I was totally shocked when I came around the corner and saw the people out there. I think last year we had in the 20s as far as the amount of people that registered, and this year it was 82. We had a huge crowd.
What was last year's, Ethan?
It was 20-some kids.
Wow. Nice improvement.
We had 82, and naturally you have a parent with all those people. The Parks Department, if you can think of last week, what it was like, the work that they did there, you know, we got the snowplow, they got the tent up when we got above zero on Thursday, and had the heater in there and had everything ready to go. And then the onslaught of the children came, and if you read the article in the paper, the fish weren't biting hard, but it was just a beautiful day. It was amazing, all the kids out there, and what John and his staff did there to put it all together, really, to be commended. It was, and you know, we're going to have a big crowd next year, because it word spread throughout the schools and the 4-H club, and with a lot of kids from, you know, all ages out there, so it was a beautiful event. The park, we're going to be coming up on that again with this resolution that we have on the parking. And I know I've shared with the committee and through a couple maps where we are working on the two new parking lots out there. And should have the plans, I believe, in February here for the for our people to look at. So we can get that work done in the spring. So other than what everyone, as far as the highway department's been going through, the work that they've done, I know I've read some very positive comments in the paper on what they've accomplished in this bad weather. You know, we have had a fairly normal winter again, what we all used to remember back. We've had these 2 and 3 inch snowfalls, 1 inch snowfall. What people don't realize is every one of these is an event for our highway department. They have to treat them all the same, and they go out, and we get ice, and we get, so it's, they put in a lot of hours, and thankfully, and hopefully, we budgeted enough for this winter, because we're in one of those now where we're, I'm sure Gary will fill us in, we're in someone where we're out more days than we're not, as far as treating the roads. The parks, another thing that I've spent some time doing is, with my granddaughter's been out at the Slaying Hills, in Fox River Park, which is close to my property. And again, what they've done to keep those things in nice shape, and the use that our parks get in the winter is amazing compared to what it used to be. And that's only because of the people that we have and the creativity that they've done over the last 20 years. Never used to have what we have out there now, a fully lit sleighing hill with banks. And the plowing that we do and to keep the parks in shape. So just want to commend Mr. Rudy for everything that's been going on here this winter and the highway department. So that's all I have. Any other supervisors? Comments, Supervisor Dodge?
Yeah, I know last budget we had money put in a budget for plowing of some of the walkways and multi-use trails, and I want to thank Jonathan. I see at Petrified Springs they've managed to keep the walking trails pretty well plowed, and I see people out there using them up to the point that it rained and it got ice, but I want to thank him for that. I regret that they haven't been able to take care of the multi-use trails on what they call a bicycle path yet, but I'm still hopeful. I think you're doing a good job out at Pets. Thank you.
Any other supervisors? So, Bob, I know you did it before the meeting, but would you like to do some formal introductions here? We have our new head of the department, Chris Mason, here, and we'll do a formal introduction.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here this evening. I am pleased to introduce to you Chris Mason. Chris comes from Shelby County, Tennessee, although is a native Chicago area person. He's been spending most of his time in Tennessee recently. That is the county in which Memphis is. So he is used to a large metropolitan area and the challenges that come along with a large county. I'm going to let Chris tell you about his background, but we looked a long time. It's been a year since Ray Arbit left, and I think we found the right guy to replace him. So with that, I'm pleased to introduce you to Chris Mason. I should tell them a little bit about you.
I graduated from University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana, engineering degree, and then went back after my first engineering job to get a master's in business administration. I've worked in various locations. City of Lakeland, which is also in Shelby County, as Public Works Director, and then I've been working seven years as a senior engineer for the Shelby County itself. Like you said, Shelby County has Memphis in it. It's a million residents. 800,000 of that is Memphis, so we get the balance kind of in there with some municipalities, so strong background in roads, bridges, and the engineering, doing parks, haven't had any golf, but look forward to adding that as a hat to wear, and just really glad to be back in the area and up by my family, and getting the first snowfall tomorrow and see how it all goes.
Well, did you? Do you have a shovel? That's how it goes.
Shovel.
Well, we really welcome you, Chris, and you'll be a part of this next month full bore. So we'll let you listen in this light agenda tonight. Thank you. Very nice to meet you. We're going to start with facilities. Let's see. So, Chris, what we do, since we have the four departments here under your new leadership, we switch it up if we have long nights. So tonight is facilities, and after it's done, they can go. Oh, one other thing I wanted to mention: Jim was out at the fishing derby, and did your feet warm up? He was out there in tennis shoes.
Yes. I came from the gym. I didn't know.
It was. Mud because of that rain, the parking lot they had found. And John said, you know, they had prizes for 50 some kids. And John said, we don't have enough. So they went to the Bannock Lake Sporting Goods, and they were great, gracious enough, as did many people, donate things. But he sent with some cash. John said, I gave him some cash to send him for more. Because we said there's a prize for every kid. Now, one of the cute stories, I'll let John tell the story about the truck when you do your report. I want them to hear that. Okay, facility.
Mr. Chairman, in the packets, one of the supervisors alluded to, this is actually the picture, it's not an artist's rendering of a fully erected tower. I know that the committee has been dealing with this for almost 2 years now, so just wanted to actually show it is up, and there's a light on the top. But it shows you some of the men. There's actually a man there working on that tower there. And tough to see, but here they were craning with a 500-ton crane in place and three guys on each corner to bolt it up. So it's quite an operation. The last page shows the prefabricated building that we had brought in. And just to let you know, Google is wiring up cities. One of them's Wichita, and Kenosha tried to get to be one of the high-speed cities. And this is the manufacturer in the building that they buy from. So not only the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, but I think we've got a good infrastructure set up. I've got the power onto the building. I thought I'd give you some actual photographic proof. As I said, we actually craned the last pieces up on December 3rd. Had the building delivered on the 19th, bolted on site, electrical power on the 26th. The fiber optic we've got being run to it, that's a critical path item for the communications in there, is scheduled to go live on the 20th, and we look to be right on time on that. So we've had some difficulties with the weather, but we've been able to do our best, and we're still looking okay for the beginning, mid of May, or March, excuse me. So, any questions on the tower?
Well, it looks like this one ladder for sure comes right to the ground. Normally, don't they make it so the kids can't get to this ladder? So
yeah, that's a good point. We're going to fence in the whole area with barbed wire around it to keep everybody out, but in the meantime, we've got to make sure that that section is inaccessible. Take out that bottom rung.
What do they call that? An attractive nuisance or something?
Correct. No, good point.
So what are you doing in the meantime?
We're just going to remove it.
Pardon?
They're just going to remove that lower section.
Anything else on the tower?
Just quickly.
Yep.
So fully functional by mid-March? Okay.
What we had here, Chris, was a study done on the three towers that we have, and one of ours was considered to be marginal. We've been working on this project to replace it for a couple of years. All right, we can move on.
No other questions. I'll move on to the Kenosha County Detention Center HVAC controls project. We did cut over three of the 10 HVAC units, digital controls. We worked out the bugs having to do with that from the analog system to digital system. We got that nailed down. We're going to start, but the weather also hampered us from moving on to the other ones, of course. So, and also, just with the maintenance staff that they had on site, we've been able to get 10 of the VAV boxes retrofitted. We've got 32 of them left to go, but the guys are doing the best with what they got. And we're also able to greatly speed up the process. Instead of them having to run all the way back to the maintenance shop through all the security doors, I was able to get a laptop to them so they can literally be right there and actuate the new VAVs. So that should save quite a bit of time going forward. Any other questions?
We'll move on to the Yule House.
And, Carol Neal was nice enough to come.
As of last Monday, they had 15 showings on the property, which the realtor felt was a good number considering the property. The viewers that they ranged looking toward a personal residence to a bed and breakfast to a school. Those are the three main things that they were looking at it for. The main objection why they don't buy it is because of the amount of work that the property needs, and they felt a lot of unknowns about such an old house. Which is true. The realtor has asked for permission to reduce the price. The current marketing price is $365. He thinks that price should be below $300. He was the one that recommended the $365. So I will defer to you on that.
He thinks it should be below $300?
Below $300.
Any comments?
I want to.
Yes, sir.
Are we looking to make a profit on that, or is that, or are we just trying to get rid of it?
There's really no basis to figure what a profit would be. So we're trying to unload it. Supervisor Noodle.
I just want the record to show that I'm going to be abstaining from any comments or any suggestion on this here, or any future votes on any amendments.
Supervisor Bliss.
What are your thoughts on that? Especially when you come in and tell you, oh, we should start again.
He was the only one that of the three that bid on this, that gave us a price of what he thought it should be. We all know that there are a tremendous amount of unknowns with that building, and because of that addition, it's really difficult to market it. I don't think it's unrealistic to bring the price down. I think it's a reasonable request, in my opinion.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, is that something we have to make a motion on, or is it something that we can allow her to have latitude to manage the
I'm not sure how this one's going to work. I think we could make a motion, but it's possibly. So I can't guarantee tonight it won't have to go to the Finance Committee, but I think we can do it.
Certainly streamline
right.
The effort.
Right.
I was hoping we gave you that latitude in the past to kind of just manage this thing. But
I told him to bring us any reasonable offer that he got, I mean, if somebody wanted to buy it for 50 grand, bring us the offer. We'll consider anything. But he said that he wants to lower it for marketing purposes. So it's not just that he's got a lower offer, but he wants to be able to market it at a lower price.
He literally doesn't have any offers. So
he does not have any offers at this time.
So I'm deferring a little bit to you, Mr. Chairman, in that I'm not sure how we make a motion. Is it make a motion to allow the price to be lowered to $300,000 for marketing purposes, or do we allow Carol to just kind of manage this thing?
I think
based on her experience, I guess we have to get final say, but
right.
It's back and forth. And
Carol's looking to us for input on it.
Yeah.
So I think as a committee here, we could make a recommendation that we lower it, and then she would have that.
Okay. Then I would like to make a motion to allow us to lower the price to the aforementioned marketing price, and allow Carol to kind of manage this and bring us back, ultimately bring the offer back to us for the rubber stamp anyways, correct?
Okay.
So I don't really know how that motion reads, other than do you want to say a hard line 300, or if at this point 300 with the ability to adjust based on market dynamics?
I'll second. Who would have seconded to allow
sorry about that.
Carol actually to tell the realtor that we are agreeable to lowering the price, and naturally anything will come back to the county. So we should probably give her a number. You know,
he said 300.
300. Okay. That has been seconded by a supervisor. Any other discussions?
So, do we want to give you a little more latitude, understanding that they come to 300? No lower than number? Okay, I know I said 300, but I can amend my motion. So that you've got a little ability to, I just look at this as a project, and it's a project on your desk that you need to get off your desk.
Okay, right?
That would be really nice. I think we all agree. It's a hard one, because you know, it's a weak market. It's got issues with this property, although the property is good. It's the building that's the issue, right?
Right.
So I'm looking to you for a little direction, because you know this isn't your first rodeo.
It's just it's a marketing price. Anything, if we get any offers, it has to be approved by the board. So this is just strictly for marketing purposes.
Would then the number they gave you good enough for at least 1 month's period of time? See whether or not we can stimulate a little bit more interest. It does not mean that we can't take a lower offer, but
right.
for 300, Would that be good enough for right now?
He just asked for below 300, so, you know, 295, 299.
Okay.
But if you want to give me some latitude and say 225 or 250.
So,
I'm going to be going to the 290s because I do realize that that's how they look at these things.
I hear you. So
I was going to say 290 is fine, but I think you would, I think, market it at whatever price you need to market it at to bring back an offer. But if you want to start out incrementally, we would say.
How about this? I'll amend my motion, a friendly amendment, to say a marketing price to be no lower than $250,000 at this point, and then you've got the ability to work with the realtor. Not to say we just go to 250, but no lower than.
So that it can be reduced incrementally then?
Yeah.
Necessary?
Right. I mean, ultimately, the offer's going to come back before us. We want to give you a little bit of ability to work.
Go to 290 for a couple of months.
Right.
You know.
I mean, the object is to try to get an offer. If you need to market it, get an offer. We can always, finance committee or our committee can reject it if the offer's too low.
President Dodge?
Yeah, I want to be clear on this before I vote. You're not going to market it at 250.
No.
Okay, you're going to market it in the 290s?
Start it in the 290s.
Okay.
But if we go for 4 weeks and with nothing, okay?
Whatever bid we get, okay.
So then maybe we lower it a little bit more
and vote on it.
Nothing else?
No, that's public information, wasn't it?
Sure.
Well, that's why I said no lower than.
So, we have a motion and a second. No further discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Abstain.
Aye. Opposed? So, there is your direction.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
Facade and roof survey.
We went through the pre-qualification process to make sure that we had bidders that had experience in this type of restoration, historical scale of this this size, and we qualified the bidders. We sent out the bid documents to them. On the 16th of December. And the bids, we have a bid due date of January 21st. We're getting some excellent, we've had some contractor walkthroughs, getting some excellent questions back, and so far so good. We're still looking to have the roofs scheduled begin in March.
Any questions on that? Well, Chris, what this is, that is probably the building where you interviewed, the administration building. We are, 2 years ago, we redid the courthouse, which is across the street. So this is our big project coming up, which I'm sure you'll be a large part of, and that's the renovation of that building. All right, well, thank you, Frank. And we'll move on to highways. Gary?
First item is review and approve the ordinance of parking regulations on County Trunk Highway KD. The ordinance that you would be considering tonight is identical to the previous ordinance that we've addressed at prior meetings. If I know it's been a while, if you want to refresh yourself as to what this involves, I did bring some extra maps. Yeah, I don't know if anybody need any.
I think everybody pretty much knows this one.
Okay, good. I know at the previous meetings, there's been a number of suggestions on various ways to address the safety concern of the town and. We've looked at the different type of warning devices that that have been suggested, and to determine the effectiveness of any type of warning sign is just not an exact science. And for me to say how effective any of those type of warning signs would be would be pretty difficult. The one thing I can say with a certainty is that installing the no parking signs is by far the highest level of safety that we could provide on that highway. And the probability of a crash is by far the lowest if the no parking signs are in place versus any of the other type of warning signs. I guess I'm still at the position I was originally in, is that I would recommend that the ordinance be approved as written. We do have the ability to modify this ordinance if we so choose tonight. We can type up a modified version and, for your approval if that is an option that you would like to take on tonight. Then the other component of this that we've discussed is the option of putting in a parking lot to serve the area of the park where the dam is. And I don't know how many of you have seen this plan, but
I think everybody
has the plan.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm recommending that the ordinance be approved as written, and nothing further.
So the we've gone through this, everyone has, and we're all aware of it. Those plans are being worked on, as I mentioned earlier, on the two parking lots. The main one that would concern the people that have been using that area down by the dam would be naturally the little one we're talking about putting up on the west side of the road. So I think in talking with Supervisor Dodge before the meeting, he had come up with a solution here. I guess I'll ask if there's any comments or anything. Supervisor Dodge?
Yeah. I see the news is here, and the rest of us have been through this time and time and time again. And, came down to the safety of the people crossing the road versus the ability for the elderly to be able to go to their favorite fishing spot by the dam. And it was well researched by myself, went out there many times. I know Supervisor Noble went out there and find elderly people that were fishing there, and actually measured the walk from the other parking lot being between 4/10 and 1/2 mile. So we had a real dilemma, and I'm just rehashing this, and out of respect for county executive and Gary Simsema and the sheriff and their complaints about people crossing that road being such a danger, I would like to amend this to change the first word, which is either side of County Trunk Highway PD, to change that to the east side of Highway Trunk KD. All of the problem, and that being because all of the problems are the people crossing the road. And we can change this too once we get the parking lot put in. But in the meantime, we still have the ability to allow those older folks to park closer to that favorite fishing area. So I make the motion we change it to the east side of County Trunk KD, and I so move.
Second. Moved and seconded. The only thing before you would speak, Supervisor Nola, if you would not mind, if you could put wording in your motion and the second, I think it would appease everyone if you did state somehow immediately after installation of a suitable parking area that the west side was also.
That was my intent, and I have no objection to that. Second, I don't have any objection.
Okay. Those who read it all?
I've always felt this is overkill. I guess the question is the town still looking for this? I mean, it seems to me that he went around us, said he was going to go around us, did go around us, and got the DNR to put up no parking signs in the little specific area that he wanted. They still actually feel this is necessary.
They filled it, and they made it more dangerous by filling it. So that's why I'm kind of on board for this east side thing, because now it's very dangerous, because they used to have a good parking here. There, so
yeah, I kind of thought this was going to happen.
Yeah.
So the other thing is the sheriff actually came and spoke, and he actually was the first one to suggest doing the east side, if I recall. So I know the sheriff might be in favor of just the east side, because he's the one who threw it out there initially. So I guess that's the only thing I want.
I was one of the reason, or probably the reason, that I asked for this ordinance to be reintroduced is because over the holidays, I had learned of another near miss out in that area from somebody that had parked on the east side, pulled out, and almost either got into a head-on, a T-bone, and something like that. So it isn't just people crossing the road, it's cars pulling out in a blind area for motorists that are going 45, 50, 40 miles an hour and come upon them. During the winter months, the danger is heightened to an even greater level. Now, if there hadn't been any proposal introduced to us with regards to parking lot, which of course is being worked on from an engineering perspective. I don't know where it is. I think by next meeting maybe we'll have something to look at. I may not have reintroduced this and perhaps just waited until we had an occurrence out there, and then it would have been a lot more palatable to perhaps find this to be acceptable. The argument that we've heard is for the handicapped and elderly that it's a much longer distance for them to walk. However, during the winter months, I just don't see the elderly trying to climb up that snowy bank or that icy bank for the fear of falling or the difficulty in the amount of snow to go through there. So at this particular time, I looked at this ordinance as something provide enhanced public safety in an area that has certainly had some near misses, has tremendous concern from the supervisors and individuals out there that are in charge of that area with regards to the township, have asked for it repeatedly. And really, during the winter months here, not a lot of activity that would be upset by this. Number two is, because of the parking lots, there's nothing that says that down the road, once the parking lot is there, you can't remove the west side, no parking, because it's going to be a lot more convenient to pull in, a lot safer to pull into this new lot or lots, and you don't have this public safety issue. I personally will not support just the east side, because my concern is it's still that blind spot. And so somebody pulls in onto the west side, which is perhaps uphill there, gets stuck, has to back out and around, and next thing you know, they're in the oncoming lane of traffic. And it's over that hill that is the blind spot, because I drove past it myself. So that is why I felt that this was a reasonable request, not only from our director of highways, but also the township that has had repeated near misses, complaints from constituents, very, very strongly worded complaints from constituents of almost being involved in a motor vehicle incident. So I would prefer that the ordinance stays as is. It is something we can change, but right now, given the weather conditions that we are experiencing here in the county this winter, as well as the number of near misses, support not only from highways, but also the various supervisors and leaders out there in the Wheatland area, I'm in favor of supporting the original ordinance and not just limiting it to the east side, because my fear is it does nothing more than just put a little bit of a Band-Aid on something that's going to turn into a festering wound.
Anyone else? Whether or not?
The parking on the east side was a hazard because the hill was to the south. And the traffic coming from the south and the people pulling out going north was the major hazard. The view coming from the north headed south and people pulling on the west side and going south isn't nearly the problem that we had coming over the hill from the south as with the parking on the west side. So I do think this is a very workable compromise, and I would ask support of it. Thank you.
This just seems to be something that we've been talking about for a very long time.
Too long.
Yeah, and I do very much respect your concern for elders. My grandfather is over 90 and he still fishes, but the longer we just keep not fixing this completely, I think the more of a headache it's going to be for everyone. I mean, I'm only here for a year, so I don't have to really worry about this, but I think we can just take care of this as this is now. It'll be better for everyone and safety of the people. And you have to think of everyone, not just the elders. And I personally haven't seen this area. I don't understand I've researched it and I don't see how much risk it is, but hearing from the reports, there's apparently a high risk of a fatal accident occurring. And there are several other areas that are far more convenient for people to fish if they are impaired and walking. And I feel like we can just take care of this as it is now, and they've researched this and determined that this is the best plan, and they've put a scientific approach to this, and that is what I'll trust the most at this point of this discussion.
Mr. May I, through you, to Mr. Simpson, a question?
Sure.
In your opinion, Gary, taking care of the east side, and I've got to rely on your opinion because you're our expert, our resident expert here, is that going to resolve the concerns that originally you had seen and experienced in talking to, you know, Wheatland leadership out there, or is that just kind of closing one eye to the foliage? I'm trying to get a sense here.
Based on the description of the the near misses, and I actually do have the copy of the accident report of the one collision that occurred, the no parking on the east side would resolve those near miss descriptions, and then the actual occurrence where there was a crash. I would still say my preference would be to have the no parking on both sides, because it does provide the highest level of safety on the roadway. But if in fact that was not going to happen, my second preference would be to just do the east side.
Okay. So the best would... Oh, I'm sorry. I'm almost done. So obviously the best is that both sides. It might help... Okay, on the east side, up until the time perhaps there is an incident, because if there's another one, we're going to line the other side, I'll guarantee you that. It'll be unfortunately, it'll wait for something to happen, but that might be the only compromise to at least get the bigger part of this pie under control, if you would.
Correct.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Simpson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Just a point of information.
Okay.
We're talking about an amendment and a resolution. Should we put the resolution on the table before we're talking about any amendments?
No, it was amended.
To?
Because it is an ordinance.
Okay.
For parking regulations.
Okay.
Yep.
So I just have one more thing, Mr. Chairman, to the maker of the amendment. So, Supervisor Dodge, I could probably come to agreement of having the east side amendment and supporting that from a perspective of at least it gets us something out there in the meantime. And if then an incident does occur, I can assure you that we'll be rebringing or reintroducing a resolution to take care of the west side. That'd be something that seems somewhat reasonable at this point in time for you.
Can we introduce a resolution at any time?
Yeah.
You know, possibly, I don't want to extend this any more than anybody does. I've had it with this, but I'm going to speak here for a minute and explain a couple of things to people. Having done this, I'm sure Roger Noble has done it longer than I have. And Mr. Sipsmo will agree to everything I will say here right now. We have many dangerous roads. We did major work on Highway C about 3 years ago, after 5 years of requests, numerous fatalities, numerous accidents. We do things and we plan them. We did not buckle under on Highway C when they wanted us to reduce the speed limit from Wilmot to I-94 to 35 miles an hour. That was a major thoroughfare. It had to be studied. It had to be done properly. To have one accident on Highway KD and for us to respond within 6 months and put no parking is a very proper way, and we have had numerous discussions on it. It initiated some work to be done in the park. These things do not happen overnight. And I think the panic I've seen from some people, and if you'll notice, the town of Wheatland's not here today. You know why they're not here? Because if they came here and acted like they acted before, there would be no compromise today. We wouldn't be voting on this east side tonight. They were told that. The county executive was told that. Enough is enough. This is a minor issue. And it's being worked on. So if people want to extend this further, they can extend it further. Or tonight something can happen. And what's going to happen tonight will be the positive approach that the town of Wheatland was after. Mr. Sipsma was asked into this later. He didn't initiate this. Mr. Sipsma did not say, Highway KD is dangerous as hell. We've got to do something about it. So, if you want to look at the long-term road projects we've had and the things that we've done, it is not with shoot-from-the-hip philosophy that we've done it. It is, and Highway C, I sat through this all. Doug Noble sat through us all. It was years and tears, because there was deaths, there was families at these meetings, there was, this is not like what we're dealing with here. So, I would urge tonight that we take care of this first step. In the spring, we're going to have these new parking lots, we can take care of the second step, and maybe, and hopefully, there won't be a bad accident out there, but there possibly will be a bad accident at 45 and K tonight. We don't know. Anybody else?
Just to reiterate the fact that Mr. Sipsman did say that the east side would resolve all the incidents and descriptions of all the incidents that have occurred so far. But in my opinion, yeah, both sides on every single county road would probably be the safest way to go. But let's be realistic. I mean, if we're addressing all the incidents, and there haven't been that many, that have occurred, then I think we're addressing the problem. So I'm still in favor of the east side. Until then, we'll address it again once we get the parking lots, and maybe then we can do both sides if necessary.
Any other discussion? If not, on the ordinance as amended, do the governors?
I'm against it. Nay.
Nay?
Oh, that's nay.
Both nay. All those for?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion carries. As amended. So, did you get that?
one word, leave the word either change to east.
Yeah.
And we, I'll, I have just another short report to do, and I'm done with that. I will modify this, and we'll get it signed tonight.
Cool. Thank you.
Just have a little bit of information on the winter. I don't want to overwhelm you with a whole lot of statistics and mathematics and numbers, but just a little bit of where we're at tonight. With the amount of times we've been out. And, the greatest impact to our budget. And that is with salt. So, so far this season, our season begins usually in November, but so far this season, we've responded to 17 storms and 10 incidents. A storm is usually a snowfall of 2 inches or more. An incident can be anything from frost to ice to drifting. Average for an entire season is 25 storms and 10 incidents. So we're above average in our responses, somewhat above average in the storms, but we've already met the entire season average in incidents. And as the chairman mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, these incidents can be quite a bit of work. There was one incident this year where we used over 800 tons of salt just on that one incident alone. They can be prolonged. They can be quite a bit of time-consuming work for us. So. From budgetary, as I said, the salt is really the biggest impact to the Division of Highways. So far this season, salt use to date about 6,100 tons. Based on historical averages, we're estimating we're going to need about 5,600 tons for the remainder of this season. So that. We're estimating about a total quantity of 11,700 tons of salt for this season, which is considerably higher than the average that we would use in a season of about 7,500 tons. The good news is we do have enough salt available to us. We had about 8,500 tons of salt on the dock in Milwaukee that's currently being trucked to our sheds. The bad news is that we're going to end up, if in fact this runs its course the way historical averages would indicate, we're only going to have about 1,500 tons of salt left at the end of this season, which puts us in a very bad position to address next season, which will begin, of course, at the end of this year in November. So we like to go into the season with 6,000 tons. So we're at this point projecting an additional 4,500 tons of salt that we're going to have to purchase in 2014 that we did not anticipate. So we'll see where that goes. We're certainly not going to take any action on that now. In fact, we could not order any additional salt until about May when the statewide bids come out. So it's just informational purposes tonight, and perhaps something that we're going to have to address in the spring. That was all I had.
Thanks, Gary. That's very enlightening. Peter, do you have a question?
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
I'm just curious as to whether or not we use any fillers. Like, I've seen other counties have used, like, brine or byproducts from manufacturing in the area. Do we use any of that in our salt or plowing?
Yeah, we do use a liquid product, the magnesium chloride, and it has a percentage mixture of an organic material to kind of temper the corrosiveness of it. We do spray directly onto pavements for anti-icing purposes so the ice won't bond to the pavement, and we also spray the salt so that when the salt is wet, you can actually reduce the quantity you use because it tends to stay on the pavement better, and then the magnesium chloride is more effective at lower temperatures, so we increase its use at lower temperatures.
So that's a separate thing, it's not from the area?
Correct.
Okay.
Some of our trucks have been experimental. I mean, we don't have to get into it in depth, but we, on the freeway, there's a computer in those trucks that senses the temperature of the road and tells the operator what product to put down. So it's not a stick your hand out the window anymore. I'll figure this out. And we have been, and I'm sure other counties have also, but the state has asked us to experiment with some of these things, and they've actually paid for some of our equipment.
Correct.
To do it in past years. I got in that one truck when we first got it, the one on the freeway, and there's this computer screen. You didn't know what the heck. You know, and that truck could do three lanes, two wings, if there's no traffic out there, and the lane it was driving. No, this is not a simple process. It's really new.
How much is the cost per ton?
Currently, it's a little over $54, between $54 and $55 a ton currently. Any additional salt that we would be required would have to be on a new bid that would be put out in May, so we won't know any additional cost. But currently, between, I think it's $54.74.
Traditionally, you know, last winter we used maybe a little bit less, so we maybe had a little bit of a surplus. Do we always kind of continue to buy at same amount, and I don't want to say stockpile it, but so you have big years, small years, it kind of averages out. Is that somewhat how it works, or is it just always year to year?
No, there's a little method to the madness. I purchase salt. Enough salt for 1 year plus the next year. So, and I do that intentionally for situations that exactly we're in now. Is if I only bought 7,500 tons of salt because that's our yearly average, we'd almost be out of salt and we'd be out of luck. So we buy this year's and next year's in the same bid, and then if we use it, it's going to happen like this year. It's going to have to be replaced. If we don't, it's in the pile, in the shed, ready to be used for next year, and we would have to purchase less in an early fill type situation of the shed. So, that's how we've been doing it, and it's so far it's worked out well.
Good. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. We'll move on to parks.
Good. I got a question.
Oh, good question.
Oops. If I may, you know, I've had constituents talk about a few things in the signatures, and oddly enough, one of the things they have talked about that I didn't bring to the committee is the stop signs on Highway C and the interstate, and they've moved several of the stop signs. And in fact, Todd Bell was one who complained to me about it. I don't know if he ever complained to you about it, but why? Why all of a sudden, I mean, this is really unusual that they would remove stop signs. Why all of a sudden have they done that?
The stop signs that they removed originally were not installed as part of the reconstruction. They never intended to put stop signs on Highway C at the frontage roads. They have stop signs on Highway C at the ramps, but not at the frontage roads. They installed the stop signs at the frontage roads when they were the phasing of the construction on I-94 required the ramps at 50 to be closed and traffic detoured on the frontage roads. So the by closing those ramps on 50 the past 2 years, the traffic volumes dramatically increased on the east and west frontage road, and they wanted to, they put up those signs on a temporary basis at C and the east and west frontage road just to address that additional traffic that was on the frontage roads. Now there is, that construction is complete. There will be no more ramp closures except for Highway 142, so there's no more need for those stop signs, and they removed them.
Now that I've actually heard, actually I do remember bringing it up once before, I think it's much safer the way it is, because I can remember now mentioning to you that if you were taking a left turn northbound off of the east frontage road, left turn on Highway C, it was such a long expanse there, it was hard to judge the traffic coming, you know, the traffic. So anyways, that's a good thing. People have been complaining about it. But other thing I want to mention, and I mean, we've had, we spent many months with this minor thing on KD. In a couple places that we've talked about before that have had many accidents, and I've had many, at least 20 constituents complain to me about Bain Station Road and County Highway H, and that's come up before. What's ever become of that? And then especially when I tell them that we're going to do a roundabout at, you know, C and H, they're like, my God, I'm never going to be able to, you know, get, I'm going to have to force my way across the intersection and take a chance and, you know, that I don't get hit. I know there's lots of accidents at that intersection.
Yeah, it's an intersection we do keep an eye on. And I'm working with the village of Pleasant Prairie on that issue. There's a fairly major development, Majestic, that's happening just down to the a bit south of there. There's a traffic impact analysis that's been completed as part of that project, and we're currently considering our options available to us for to address not only the current background traffic, but the projected traffic moving forward with that development and many others that are occurring in that area. So we're kind of sitting back a little bit right now, and are going to. It's most definitely something that both the county and the village are going to move forward with something. And actually, when the Highway C and H intersection is reconstructed this summer, that intersection will have a temporary four-way stop put installed, because that will be part of the detour route using Bain Station Road.
Bain Station and H will have a stop signs, temporary
four-way stop, so we'll see how that functions too.
Okay, another one I brought up to you before is 165 and Sheridan Road. I still have two people tell me that it's almost impossible to make a left turn on Sheridan Road if you're eastbound on 165. You want to try to make a left turn, especially if there's a truck. A truck has to just go for it, hope they slam on the brakes and don't hit them, is what I'm being told.
Yeah, we did approach the Wisconsin Department of Transportation about that intersection. They did do the warrant analysis for traffic signals, and they have agreed to signalize that intersection. I'll have to get you their schedule. I don't know off the top of my head, but there is traffic signal scheduled to go in at that intersection.
Okay, and one other, and I did not bring this one up before, but I've also now been getting complaints. For the most part, these are all somewhat in my district.
He did pretty good so far. He's agreed to two.
I know. This is a new one. But if you're exiting I-94 on the northbound on-ramp at 165, there's a stop, it's signaled, stop signals. Well, if you're southbound, there's no signal. It's just a stop sign. And I'm told
that in the morning you can't get across because U-Line has so much traffic going, you know, a lot of the traffic comes from the north, and they're heading over to U-Line, so you can't get across to make your left, you can't make a left turn to get to the industrial, you know, industrial part. And so that, you know, the point is they've got traffic controls for the northbound off-ramp. They got traffic control, well, I think it's just stop signs that I always see. They got traffic controls for the northbound on-ramp at 165. Why haven't they put in traffic controls for this off-ramp? I know that one's probably not been studied, but I'd like you to take a look at that.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that, and I can certainly bring it up to the Wisconsin Department of Transportation and see. That still would technically be the intersection of I-94 and 165.
Yeah,
on
that side of the road.
Yeah, I can bring that up to them. I wasn't aware of that myself.
Okay, well, just a quick one. Supervisor Nolan, did your constituents give you a time? Because I drive that every day and I haven't experienced it, but I'm going through there maybe about 8 o'clock.
That would be 7:30 to 8 in the morning.
Yeah, 8 isn't really, I've never had a real, maybe there's a tractor trailer, right, that was southbound, getting off 165 and wanting to go east, okay? Yeah, it's not traffic control, but you might wait up maybe 30 seconds, a minute at most, but that's about 8 o'clock-ish, 8:15.
Okay.
Might be early, so just so you have a time.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Jeff. Quick call, hold on. One, sorry, I had to keep it here.
That's okay.
One last question on, I think, gosh, 75th Street, that's the highway right here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are there any plans for that as far as the developments of Strawberry Creek and Crossway Community Church? Is this, there's the turnoffs for them don't line up with the entrances? So if you turn, you have to do a U-turn to then get into the entrances. And I don't know if that's, I mean, we haven't had any accidents, but I just know that's been a concern.
Yeah, that's a bit of a concern with me. I'm on Highway 50, and the Wisconsin Department of Transportation likes that people have to do that. They think that's a better option to do a U-turn at a controlled intersection like that than a crossover. But so I don't think that there's much chance of them changing.
So there's an accident, nothing's going to happen, I guess.
Yeah, well.
All right. I was just curious because that's been brought up. People who know that I'm in the public works have asked me about that.
Right.
Thank
I wouldn't anticipate that changing.
Okay, thank you, though.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think you can go to those copies now.
I'm on my way.
Jeff?
All right, I'll start out with Kemper Center. Down at the Anderson Arts Center, I believe it was around mid-December, we found out that the boiler had a crack in one of the tubes in it, and the service company did a temporary repair. The parts were ordered. They're out in Pennsylvania. I guess it's two sections of tubes that go into the boiler. The repair's going to run about $12,000, but Jim Kupfer has a line that he put in the facilities budget to address, I believe, emergency HVAC repairs and things of that nature. So hopefully we can cover that repair from.
I saw in the budget resolution, it probably doesn't apply to Kemper, but I see where the county pays for boiler insurance.
Yes.
Apparently not at Kemper, though.
I don't know if it's at Kemper or not.
Because if we had insurance on it, what would it cost us? I know we do have boiler insurance on, but I don't know which facilities that applies to.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
I've seen it in the budget, so.
I think Kemper pays their own insurance,
right.
Things like that. We just provide them that funding, the $50,000. And then some of the CIP money, but we don't actually pay their expenses like that.
Yeah.
They cover their own.
All right, and then at Katy Park, we had the fishing derby, and I do have a couple of pictures I'll pass around. I didn't want to print out all of them for everybody, so if you want to take a look at it. Again, we had 82 kids, and it was a huge turnout. Everybody had a lot of fun. Mr. Cucker did run and get more door prizes because we had sort of underestimated, but it was a good day. Cabela's was down. They sent two folks down and handed out a lot of items, but they spent most of their day out on the ice helping the kids, drilling holes and just being part of the event, which we really appreciate. We're almost too big for the tent we had set up, but I don't have any that are any bigger, so next year we might have to do the awards outside. Emerald Ashbore.
What about the story about the truck?
About what?
The truck.
And we're waiting for the story about the truck.
A funny story?
We don't know if it's funny. Could be very sad.
I hope it's not sad.
Okay, I had one little guy. They came probably about 6:30 and registered, went out. He must have been about 4 years old. And when I was collecting all the free door prizes from all the people we do business with, I asked them for donations for the door prizes. Napa gave me a monster truck. That thing had to be like this and this and about this tall. Was a little guy, he fell down in the water and he got wet, so he was cold, so he couldn't stay and fish. He was going home, and I think he was a little disappointed because we said we had prizes for everybody. So after he come by, and I said, well, I asked his dad, he said, where are you parked at? I said, I'll bring him something. And I hated to put that great big truck on the pile with fishing lures and things because there would have been a lot of kids going, oh, that's what I want, you know. So anyways, I gave him that. His eyes got about this big around. He thought, oh man, it's like second Christmas. So it was cute. So I think
he'll be back.
He'll be back, yeah.
So that, I'll be disappointed next week.
Anyways, and then Emerald Ashbore. Right now I have a call in because the consultant was looking into some different loggers to see if one would be willing to come down and remove a lot of these trees that have lumber-sized logs in them just to remove them. We wouldn't pay them, they wouldn't pay us. We would just get them out of there, and I haven't got a response. But on the other side of this, I think I have just about daily conversations with Jim about how to break this down and somehow figure out a way financially to be able to do this over 5 years. And the problem with that is because you've got trees in five different states of condition, and then you throw in an option of treatment, and then the whole replanting process. So once we get something that kind of makes sense, we'll probably bring it forward. I mean, the consultant gave us the numbers, where the trees are, and the actual costs, but the one thing she didn't do, which we didn't ask her to do, she kind of calculated if our staff did it for a certain price too, but the equipment and fuel and all of that sort of stuff isn't factored into that. So I mean, when you look at $2 million over here and $900,000 over here, it's not apples to apples by no means. So anyways, that's where we're at with the old Ashbore. The Thompson property, which is that parcel right on the northeast intersection of Highway 31 and JR that chunks into Petrifying Springs. We closed on it on January 3rd. I'm working to put together a bid to tear that house down and also the park residence up on the east end of the park over by Parkside that used to be the director's home and hasn't been occupied now for quite a few years, and it's just We really have no use for it. It just sits there. We tried putting it out to see if there was any chance that the UW or social services or somebody needed an office in between Racine and Kenosha, and nobody in the county is interested. So it's not handicap accessible. It's a tri-level. So we figure the best thing to do is remove it. And it's starting to turn into a nuisance. So we're looking at taking both those houses down this year. The other thing is we did the dam removal and at Pets and replaced the bridge there. And the Wisconsin Association for Floodplain, Stormwater, and Coastal Management recognized the Public Works Department with a award for its excellence in project design and implementation. And again, I know nothing of building bridges or anything else, and Gary Sipsma played a major role in this project. And this was most of the award was mostly doing on his part. But I think it's nice that we were recognized for that. I mean, anybody that's drove through Pets now and saw them.
So then we have either an award-winning bridge designer or an award-winning bridge builder. Which one is it that we
there
have?
There was the design and implementation of the project.
Oh. Pretty prestigious there.
Yes.
Here we thought you just need to plow snow.
No. But again, that's everybody worked on that project. Jim Kunkler, financially, Vicki Gaylor.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
The Silver Lake Mountain Bike Trail, there's nothing going on. It's too much snow and too cold for the volunteers to work on it. The only thing I did do is I did meet with them out there, and they had a professional designer come down from La Crosse to take a look at their plans and make sure that everything looked really good. And basically, they had them down for consulting, and that's that. Pringle Nature Center, there's really nothing new to report about them. But again, they do come out and participate also at the ice fishing derby. They had snowshoes to rent, but then the rain sort of ruined snowshoeing and that, so nobody showed up to do it. But they show off their schedule and talk with folks and add to the event as well. The last thing that I have is when we repurpose money within the CIP, that if the monies are there within the same line, we can redesignate that money and shift it for equipment. And what I'm asking to do is, instead of purchasing two fertilizer spreaders, I'm about $9,000 short on the purchase of a mower for Brightondale for the park. And I would like to only purchase one fertilizer spreader and use that other money to purchase a mower. I believe I have in $18,000 in the budget, and the mower is going to be, I'm just going to run it up at $28,000. Just, it's probably $27,000 in the change.
We have the extra $10,000 in the other budget.
In the same, right, it's in the budget, but it's right. In a different item.
So there's no money being asked to add, it's just being.
Right. And that's done usually with a letter to finance.
Right.
But I always want to make you folks aware of what we're doing. This committee.
Yes.
Were we planning the purchase of a mower, or is this something new?
No, I had a mower in.
Okay. Oh. We had a budget for a mower for $18,000, two fertilizer spreaders for $9,000 apiece. So the total was like 37 some thousand. What we're going to do is we're going to buy one fertilizer spreader for $9,000, and the mower is going to cost us $25,000. So the total budget was $37,000, and we're going to spend $35,000 by a better mower, well, a different mower. The original spec, original estimate was wrong, and just one fertilizer spreader. So there'll be some money left over. That's all we're doing is switching it.
Will this give us greater capability, cover more ground, less man hours?
Well, it's for Brightondale Park, and if you've been up to Brightondale Park, it's basically all woods.
Yeah.
And this mower actually has two steer axles, so we can go right on around the trees without digging furrows like our turf cats and that do. And the turf cat that's up there is probably about a $19,000 replacement to buy one of those again, if that's exactly what we went with. But this mower is just a better fit for the application. And the one that's up there that we're using is a 1999, and we didn't even want to put the money in it. The hour meter broke 3 years ago. So we don't even, I mean, it's way more hours. It's beyond its useful life. So we were due. It's just we were trying to update it and get something that's a little bit more efficient for that setting.
So you think we'll pick up a little efficiency with this new capability?
Well, the other thing that those type of mowers do that this one won't is when you're circling trees with them, they make a trench. And you can see that around every tree where that inner tire slips a little when you go around them. And this should eliminate that up there.
Okay.
The guy will still get dizzy, but he'll still be good.
Then he goes, just has to go counterclockwise. Yeah. The other thing is, and only one fertilizer is not going to then present a limitation to you guys.
We'll be fine.
Okay. So, either that.
Just a suggestion. I know the city has and we're talking about the emerald dash trees. The city has a program where they sell firewood, I believe, $100 a lot. I don't know if that would be financially advantageous for the county to look into something like that, because apparently you're going to have a lot of firewood, so just wanted to mention it to you.
We're looking at, actually we met and we do have a plan, and one of the options is to sell some firewood, but it has to be within a 25-mile radius of where the trees come from. So yeah, everything's open right now. But what we're, I was going to mention, because I don't know, Chris, you probably haven't heard of this one, but the emerald ash borer is a pest, a borer, that has been moving east for years. I'm in the nursery business, and about 10 years ago we quit planting ash because we knew this was coming this way. It moved in from Michigan. So now it's here and it's heavy. And what we've done has been proactive as a county. We had the Department of Natural Resources and a forester come in and do an assessment. So what we're looking at is probably a 5 to 8 year replacement policy in our parks and golf courses. And we're at over 5,000 trees that we're talking about. So you'll hear a lot about this.
Sounds like our pine beetle.
Yes, definitely. It's a borer, and it attacks the one variety of tree. Yep. So I mean, you've heard that emerald ash borer. Now, when John comes in for the $2 million, you'll know what it is. Yes, Gabe.
Question: going back on the borer and the fertilizer, we're going to purchase two fertilizer before it was in the budget. But now we can get away with one. So if we don't need, we did not need two, why do we budget for two at that time?
What we were doing was replacing, so we're going to use the old one. So we still have the spreader. It was time to replace it.
Okay.
But they need us more. So to not increase the budget, we're going to get by with the old fertilizer spreader. And so get this better one.
Eventually
we're going to need that. Yep.
Probably next year. You think we can get away with this year with the fertilizer?
Yeah, the next couple of probably.
Couple of years?
Yeah.
All right. But did you happen to notice a difference in the thickness of the ice last year to this year? Was there a difference? Yeah. About the same?
Yeah, last year we had about 8.
Yeah.
This year there was 15.
Oh, wow.
15 inches of ice. So there was no place on. Last year we had cones across a couple areas.
Yeah.
This year that lake was froze solid, and we didn't have any issues worrying about any thin spots or anything else.
Great.
Which was great.
Thanks, John. We'll move on to golf.
I'll try and make this brief. We are working on rebooking all of our past outings and finding new outings for 2014. Just booked a nice 64-person outing today for September 20th, so that was nice. Petrifying Springs is full for the afternoon leagues already, but we should have around 400 players. The most we are really able to accommodate with just having 18 holes over there for the afternoons. But we're still looking to fill more leagues at Brightdale. And we're working on a couple ideas that hopefully will bring some more people out that way. Next month, we'll be bringing you our proposed golf and season pass rates to vote on for the meeting in February. Projects that we are working on currently, is we're working on the bid specs for the completion of the last two holes of the white birch course for the irrigation. The greens and tees are done, but the fairways are not. Budgeted is about $50,000 to complete that project, so then the whole white will be done. We're going to be working with Gary and his crew on paving the maintenance shop road and yard at Petrifying Springs, and possibly right behind the building there where we staged the carts. We're also going to be completing the cart pass on the Blue Spruce course. And then today we met with our vendor for the flooring at Brightdale, and we picked out some real nice carpeting, you know, similar to this, only it's browns and tans. That's going to be throughout the dining room, it's down the stairs, through the hallways, out to the cart pit and into the locker rooms. So we're very happy about that. We also picked out terracotta color tile for the kitchen. We got our sample back, and there was no asbestos problems there, so we're going to be able to remove all the tiling in the kitchen and put new tile in there. And we're also working on purchasing some new golf cars and replacing the beverage carts. And we're purchasing a utility vehicle and some mowing equipment also for the golf courses. So that's what we're working on. Tomorrow night, I am going to the appreciation party for the Visitors and Convention Bureau for Kenosha County. And we are winning the award of Tourism Partner of the Year. So with our co-branding and marketing with them, they decided that Kenosha County Golf was the Tourism Partner of the Year. So we'll be getting that award tomorrow night.
Congrats.
The other thing, tomorrow evening we're going to be getting a report on the Executive Committee on the request for proposal for the liquor sales. So we'll be able to report on that at our next meeting. What's going on there?
Normally at the February meeting, which would be our next meeting, we go over and reset the golf rates. Is that what your plan is?
Correct.
And I understand then too that you'll be presenting us what the plan is for the reorganization of the meetings of golf.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So we have both of those on the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Could you put it on the agenda too as opposed to just saying director's report?
Okay.
So that, I mean, so the public knows that we're going to set the golf rates, and the public knows that we're going to talk about the view of the game.
Right. Thank you, Dan. Ask for a motion to adjourn?
So move.
Move to adjourn. Second by Commander Noble. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The government says you're going to ask you first.
It's all right. Maybe we didn't want to adjourn, but now we've been influenced by the adults of the world. Darn.
You're fighting, everyone.